Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight. I'm Tian Wei. Advanced and cost-efficient China-made electronic vehicles, or EVs, have become popular worldwide. Some economists believe it is a testament to the nation's new quality productive forces. China produces around three-quarters of the world's EVs batteries as well. BYD is the world's largest manufacturing of electronic vehicles. Here is my conversation with BYD America CEO Stella Li. Electronic vehicle now is so popular, the public love it, consumer love it, but at the same time, we also see different debates regarding the electronic vehicles, including about the materials of it, of the batteries and the way of producing. So what do you see is the potential to avoid the danger that this will become a collateral damage of geopolitics?
Yeah, so first I want to share electric vehicle, transportation contribute more than 30% of pollution for the total emission. And then if in the city, we are here in San Francisco, transportation contribute more than 60% of the pollution. So electrify all the fleet, all the vehicle here, is the everybody needs. Climate change is not the matter about which country, what's your race, what's your political position.
Yeah.
It's all the human beings need to work together, and it doesn't matter you came from, where, which country, and which race, right? So we need to work together to save our planet. So then to China build up a very good example because of the policy support. And then, now today, the EV penetration in the every year is increasing. Like this year can be 30%, maybe next year can be 40%. Yeah, but now other country, Europe is a little bit slowed down, but still 22%. But in US, we're less than 10%. But California, we're more than 25%. So, I was in China together with some investor, some friend from US, investor, and then we walk on the street. They say, "Oh, Stella, why is it so quiet?" Uh-huh. Now I realize because all the buses, all the taxi, all the car are electric car. So even you see a lot of traffic, but you don't hear a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. That's the future. I think for electrify all the transportation, that's the direction. Only can going forward, never can be backwards.
What about the competition? It's fierce competition right now. You have BYD, everybody knows it, but you also have Elon Musk advocating his brands and many others. Even China also alone, there are a tremendous amount of brands already popular. So how do you see this competition where we are seeing so intense now?
Yeah, so I think the two companies are doing a wonderful job. One is BYD from China, one is Tesla from US, are the two a great leader globally for pushing all the industry to the future. Now, I think we don't worry about all the company to do the electric car, put all the investment bad for future. We're more concerned is for the conventional car company. They are not 100% in. No. If they are not 100% in believing the future, they will have trouble very, very quickly. That is not because of politics. It's because they are technology, because of the consumer right to choose selection. So then I will argue all the company with maybe long history in the auto industry, you should really put all the focus to invest for the new future technology, which should be either battery operated electric car or other technology. But the future, the destination with Chinese market, which is now number one auto market, showing, demonstrate electrification is doable as a consumer love it.
In the discussions taking place between the two presidents, China and United States, you heard two words often being mentioned in different circumstances. Yes. One is competition, the other is cooperation.
Yes.
Now, what do you see is the nature of the backdrop of this relationship, China and United States? What does that mean to business leaders like you? Well, the nature of that is still evolving.
I think that is a very good two wording. So China-US relationship is never enemy. we have competition, but at the same time, we have a lot of cooperation. You will see a lot of business investment is some fund invest in China with very successful return. Some Chinese fund here invest U.S. company also very successful. And then the both market, Chinese market and also U.S. market are the two largest market for consumer. So for any business entity, you never can lose one market. You want to win in both. So that's the reason I think U.S., China, at this moment, we should really have more like a fearless leader, like Gavin Newsom, step out to really change people's perception, to show the good example. We need to cooperate, then we can build both country like successful for business, for everything.
Last time when I got to know you and your colleagues, it was when Governor Newsom visited China.
I think he visited like Shenzhen, Beijing, Shanghai, and the other city. It's a very complete like a trip for him to deeply understand what China is doing and what's the contribution China made for the climate change.
And you know, it's such a big story, both inside China and the United States, that Governor Newsom, coming from California, jumped on that EV. Yes, indeed. And also drive for a little while. And, you know, the First Lady of California certainly looks very happy as well.
Like first, California is the maybe fifth largest GDP globally, right, on the national level. But then the same time, California is full of the innovation, technology. But to impress governor with our Yangwan U8 is not easy. So he jumped in the car with all the high tech in California. He was, wow, this is incredible. It's really like a very new stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we should bring to US, we should bring to California. So he was deeply like impressed by our U8.
I really wonder, what was it like to communicate with the team before they made the decision to visit your factory?
Actually, BYD invests in California for more than 10 years. So in the city of Lancaster, it's just 1 mile like north of Los Angeles. BYD has the U.S. largest electric bus manufacturer. We produce electric buses here. Then we produce electric school buses over there. We do the like a battery pack assembly. We also do the electric trucks assembly here. Mm. So we hire like more than 750 union jobs. Then also not only for that, BYD is really to support community. We are one of the company with a lot of single mom, single parent, single dad, and the second chance employee. They're working for BYD. So the last time the HR showed me, the average like working time service BYD is more than 8 years. Just like our name, Build Your Dreams, we really use our technology, invest heavily here in California, then turning BYD to become California company, and then we use our job opportunity to change people's life.
But zero-sum game is a reality, right, in some people's minds. So as a Chinese international business operating here, how do you see you are dealing with the challenges of the so-called zero-sum game? And how would you persuade those people? It is not.
Actually, I think we just, as a Chinese community here, we just need working harder to raise our voice, to talking to the politic, to talking to communicate with all the environment, different business group, yeah. And to be more transparent, to show our operation. Like, for example, I always make a speech, come to Lancaster, BYD Lancaster facility. You'll find our facility is more American than any other the company here. So you will see a lot of like a female working in the production line. You will see a lot of African American people working here. You will see a lot of Latino like working.
The diversity there, yeah, in the work.
The BYD, and they enjoy. So that is the kind of story we should be more like aggressively to tell everybody. So very often we organize our, not myself, it's our staff. They go to Washington D.C. to knock the door of the Congress, knock the door of the like Senate to say, we is the like get a job here. We like before BYD came, we even stay at the shelter. But BYD came, changed our life. And then we, they gave me opportunity. Really, I can afford a house now. I can afford my kids' education.
Right.
So we often bring our staff to tell the politics this different story. So this helps a lot. So sometimes I think the two countries always use national security to actually, in the back, is unfair competition. It's because the competition could not win, and then they use political lobby to win. This is not fair. And a lot of politics, they are not really an expert for business. So we need maybe to have a more voice to show the true story, to show the fact. Then this will help for people to understand you, and also help the two nations. I think the media need to give the fact too. Don't misleading people. Mm-hmm. So then we need to rebuild the trust.
Right.
So I'm super happy now pandemic is gone. So now you can travel freely to both countries.
Right.
Then this will help a lot. Once the people start meeting, talking, then find out, oh, we are the same human being. Then we share the same planet.
Indeed.
So in another place, we can cooperate together.
We have seen women leaders like you being resilient in an ever-evolving society and ever-evolving environment. How much do you see the core qualities of women can be of tremendous significance today, especially it's a world full of challenge?
Yeah, I think a woman naturally is very good at communication. They communicate very good skill on the communication. So that's bring the benefit to the maybe global cooperation. So often I travel a lot globally. Each time, if there's any suspect or challenge here, we stand up, easy communicate. This maybe female leader can do better job than the male leader. So also you see the woman in the house is a very important role, need to manage everybody's schedule with a different agenda. We work together. So this is naturally being trained. We need to multitask. So this is the female's natural capability.
Right.
So each time I stayed at a lot of stage to encourage a female come out for to do the professional work, to be the leader. So I think this is a lot of benefit. Better communication will solve the maybe better cooperation. And sometimes in order to achieve your goal, you need to compromise something. And then you also need really cooperate together.
So this is give and take.
A give and a take. This is today's geopolitical situation. We need to do this way.
So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Semiconductors are indispensable electronic parts in high-tech industries such as aerospace, computing, and other applications, fueling intense competition around the high-tech global players. For deeper insights, I spoke with John Nerfer, the president and CEO of the U.S. Semiconductor Industry Association earlier. Here is his take. Many do not know why businesses are here in the middle of the trade negotiations among ministers of trade from all over the world. Tell me more about your mission.
We 80% of our customers are overseas, so all the market opening that the WTO has done, all the trade disciplines has put in place is really important for us. The other thing is, well, one of the big secrets to our success is that we have a kind of a breathtaking innovation, which is driven by the fact we reinvest so much of our sales into R&D. The other important leg of this is that from the beginnings, we've been very, very, very tied into the global supply chains. Mm-hmm. And so having the WTO there, keeping free trade in place, and making it stronger has been absolutely critical for us. Mm-hmm. More specifically, mm-hmm. this time we're here, we're very concerned about some of this loose talk about not extending the e-commerce moratorium. Well, a lot of our designs, which are super complex, mm-hmm. A lot of our software, a lot of our process data is constantly moving around the world in the supply chains. And contemplating that somehow getting hit with tariffs is pretty rough for us. And it would be a real cooling chill effect on our ability to do business around the world.
We see a lot of populism in the world, And sometimes policymakers make use of the excuse of populism and the excuse of slogans. How do you see these kind of things are being taken advantage?
My view on this is kind of short-term gains, which are limited, versus long-term gains, which are massive. And if you put tariffs on cross-border data flows, well, you capture some revenue in the short term. But in the long term, you make it harder for these incredible products and bits of data to get to consumers' hands and to allow them to use them to create growth across the economy. We worked very hard 10 years ago, and China was actually a partner in this effort to expand the Information Technology Agreement, which is the hard goods side of tech. And we ran into the same problem. We ran into countries, particularly smaller countries, that were very focused on the short term and worried about revenue loss from giving up tariffs and not thinking about, well, wait a minute, we get all these high-tech products in our economy that is going to help us grow the economy in healthcare and financial services for the long term, obviously much bigger benefits, harder to measure. So that's the, I think the key tension here is, are you thinking short term or are you thinking long term?
Mm. The other thing about your industry is we see the industrial policies that different countries are putting on the sector. It is one of the most crucial. You could say for future cooperation, you could also say for future competition. What is the picture of industrial policy in your sector?
Yeah.
How do you see that?
You know, for a long, long time, our federal government wasn't in the game of offering incentives. And as a result, our chip manufacturing moved offshore quite substantially in the last 30 years. And now roughly 75% of all chip manufacturing is happening in East Asia. Mm-hmm. That's an overconcentration. Mm-hmm. And so what the Chips and Science Act is aimed to do is not bring everything back, not even near everything, but bring back more to make us less vulnerable if there's some kind of seismic disturbance, some kind of another pandemic, so that we're a little bit more secure. And, you know, we live in an imperfect world, yeah. And countries have been offering subsidies for years and years and years in our sector, targeted subsidies, and our government has not. At least now we're in the race, the playing field is more level, and we feel that as an industry, that this was very necessary.
You suggested, sir, that you are not there to occupy the market or to dominate the market, quote unquote, but rather to a degree that to what you just explained. But that is a very interesting and intricate balance to take.
If you look at what's happened to our industry, in 1990, 37% of the world's semiconductors were produced, manufactured on U.S. shores. Mm-hmm. Now it's down to 10%. Mm-hmm. So what's the perfect number? Well, we got to stop the decline. We got to turn the corner and start coming back up. And that's what the Chips and Science Act is going to help do. And already we have over $200 billion in private sector commitments to build more facilities on U.S. shores. This is not about bringing everything back. It's about taking some vulnerability out of the system. It's about spreading the risk out more across more geographies. And, you know, the pandemic kind of, it got everyone understanding what chips were, but it also got us thinking about where our vulnerabilities were. And it got people understanding that, you know, at least in manufacturing, there's too much over-concentration of manufacturing in East Asia.
Mm. On the one hand, almost all national governments now understand the importance of chips, semiconductors, and they want to put incentives or encouraging measures or whatever you say, whatever you term it, to the industry in their own countries. So that might be a pro for the industry. But on the other hand, the complexity of geopolitics related to this also put your industry so much torn in so many different places in the world. And thinking about a global company that have to handle this, how do you see these quite mixed up circumstances.
Most solutions are imperfect, and we're not going to get the balance perfect, but I think we're going to get in a better place than we were. The fact that we're having so many of our companies making commitments to get more manufacturing on U.S. shores, again, but our companies are also making commitments to put manufacturing in Germany, to put manufacturing in Singapore, different places around the world. And it's, again, if you just look at it, it's spreading the risk out.
The other thing is about the latest technologies. It's taking place as a lightning speed, if I could use that analogy,
yeah, especially probably faster than that.
And therefore, what does this industry mean? I mean, your sector.
We did, in a very productive way, was expanding the information technology agreement, and that's eliminating tariffs on a whole range of tech products. And we did that successfully in 2015. It was about a 4 or 5 year negotiation. China was a big part of that. Sometimes there was some tough discussions, but at the end of the day, we all came together and we figured this out. And it was the kind of first and only market access, market expansion agreement that the WTO was able to successfully do since it was founded. And we did it with the ITA. And it with our industry, there's, as you mentioned, there's lightning speed, innovation, all sorts of new products. And so that was almost 10 years ago. It's time to do it again. We have all sorts of new products coming, you know, coming online. Last time we included all sorts of medical devices, life-saving medical devices. And there's all sorts of other things we can put in an ITA 3. So we would like to make the next step to recognize the innovation in our industry and do an ITA 3. And so I think the days of these big singular undertakings in the WTO are over. We have to do plurilateral agreements. We have to take smaller bites of the apple. And I do think that one of the things the WTO needs to do, focus on things it can get done, show value to the members, so that when the members are talking to people, decision makers in their capitals, that they can show the value proposition of the WTO. So I think an ITA 3 would be a really important step forward.
Also about your industry is the amount of manufacturing capacity that's actually needed in order to support all these kind of latest innovation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really want to know how you are looking at the potential. You know, what are you researching about in order to understand the potential?
You know, one thing that we look at a lot in our industry is projections for growth. And there's a lot of projections out there saying that our industry, which is, I don't know, 560, 570 billion today, will grow to $1 trillion by 2030, driven by AI, driven by Internet of Things, driven by 6G, driven by the automotive sector, electric vehicles, which have thousands and thousands of chips in them. So we know we're on a kind of almost a hockey stick slope up in terms of our growth, but it takes 2 to 4 years to get manufacturing capacity in place. And that's why you're seeing such a flurry of activity among the chip industry leadership to figure out where to put that capacity so that we can get the shovels in the ground and get the production in place to meet the mountain of demand coming our way.
Do you see there's enough diversity of companies that are doing that?
You know, there's been a lot of consolidation in our industry, and the reason for that is that to survive in our industry, you need scale. You need to be big, particularly when it comes to the high end,
indeed,
the chips. And that's why the most high end chips are only produced in a few countries, a few economies.
We see so many creative ideas as to where to look for the energy that's needed from entrepreneurs, from the civil society.
Yeah,
but John, I mean, as someone who is working with the industry, what are some of the things that you are looking at closely?
We are very much seeking out locations now that can provide more renewable energy. And the other big challenge that we're all facing, including China, is workforce. We all have a lot of STEM talent, but we don't have enough STEM talent that is trained in the semiconductor industry. That's a special kind of training.
Indeed.
And so we're all confronting that challenge. In fact, the CHIPS Act is kind of a big roll of the dice for the U.S. government. It's a kind of has not done something like this for a long time, maybe not quite never.
And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team, thanks for being with us. Bye for now.